This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff. Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff. It's 3 o'clock on the dot. You know what that means. It's time for Matt Lanna and the King. Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff. Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Driving home in the traffic jam. But we got Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff. Na, 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 Chuck and Chernoff, the Fan.
Oh, a dynamite way to bring us into the 3 o'clock hour of the program. Chuck Dowdle. He couldn't hit those high notes when I worked with him on the Braves postgame show. He has really evolved over time, a man of so many talents. Singing, certainly one of them, as you can absolutely tell. Speaking of talent, that's exactly what This Stuff Matters has. 3 o'clock hour brought to you by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters podcast at thisstuffmatters.net. Matt is ill. We wish him well. We expect him to be back full force on Monday. Mike Morgan sitting in with the King and with Dylan Short. Lots of get-to-get. We haven't even touched really a lot of football yet. We've scratched the surface on it. We started with a lot of Braves talk. I had to get a little bit of psychological relief. I've been down since the Spencer Strider news. I'm not going to lie. It's affected me. Appetite loss, sleep reduction, anxiety. And I asked Chuck and Dylan to make me feel better, and they did a little bit. I might get off the Lexapro. That's about it. I'm still a little bit bummed about it. I'll tell you what else I'm bummed about, guys. Look, I get it. We are in a more diversified TV landscape than ever. But for a three-game series, if I want to watch the Braves, I've got to go to three different sources. So Apple TV tonight, I have no idea who the announcers are. Bally's tomorrow with our friends, Brandon and CJ, and then ESPN for Sunday Night Baseball. I'm still not entirely sure if I even get Apple TV.
Okay.
What about you guys?
Now, I'm a little – did you say MLB Network in there?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. I thought they were on MLB Network one game this weekend, I thought – because I kept seeing it being advertised across the bottom of the screen on a different network. And then I thought, no, Chuck, it's Apple Plus. But you're saying it's three separate places.
Now, sometimes.
That's what my intel is telling me.
Mike, no, I'm telling you, it's a Friday. I mean, you live in Atlanta. Look at the weather. Your team's in first place. You sound like you need to give me your copay and you want to hold the talking pillow. Like, things are pretty good, man. What? Like, turn that frown upside down, brother.
Hey, I love the team. Again, they're going to win a bunch of games. I needed somebody to help me feel better about the Strider injury.
Feel better.
Now, technically, you're right, Chuck. Tomorrow they do play on MLB Network, but anytime they play on MLB Network, in this market, they also play on Bally, which is good if you're in
this market.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
right, wait, they're on four places.
Basically.
Bally's, MLB Network, Apple Plus, and...
And ESPN.
And ESPN.
There you go.
I'm with you on that, though, Mike. I hate... this goes to a deeper problem with baseball. I don't know why they constantly get in their own way. It's like, I'm assuming that you saw this earlier in the year, right? Where, like, the Chicago White Sox. You could not watch the Chicago White Sox in Guaranteed Rate Field. Like, they were blacked out inside their own stadium. Now, that's probably a good thing if you're a White Sox fan. You probably don't want to watch them, but it does speak to a larger point. Like, why doesn't baseball maybe, I don't know, fix the glaring blackout issue before trying to cross-stream onto, like, every single platform they possibly can?
Yeah, that part's embarrassing. The fact that you have so many – this is still one of the biggest footprints of any fan base in any sport is the Braves, right? We all know that. I spent a lot of time this time of year in Florida, and they've got the Marlins and the Rays. You want to know the most of people I know here? They're still Braves fans. South Carolina, spent many a day in South Carolina. Overwhelming majority of people there, Braves fans. You know what I hear from people in South Carolina and Florida? I can't get the games on TV. Now, good time to remind everybody, you can go to the 680 The Fan app, every game right there. I've done that plenty of times. Listen to Ben, listen to Joe. They'll take great care of you. But if you want to watch it and you're not in the Bally's Braves footprint, it's an embarrassing situation. I can't believe that we're still sitting here in 2024. We're not talking about people in Salt Lake, Utah. We're talking about people in neighboring states that want to watch the Braves on television,
well, also,
and they can't do it.
Ted Turner figured this out in 1976. Like, I'm not kidding, with, I don't know, a stone tablet in space, he figured out how everybody gets the games. Now, obviously, it's so multi-layered and different now, and here is the reason. So that's a nice little anecdotal, snappy response. Ted Turner did it 50 years ago.
Money.
Here's the truth. And somebody in, I'll say, network radio actually said this to me about 3-4 years ago. The MLB.com, because I was like, well, I get games blacked out in the app, and I have to get MLB.com app. Response was, the MLB.com app is the most profitable app in history.
It's also terrible. Like, MLB.tv is an awful app.
It's $149 a year, and for that, you get every game, every market, whatever. But it's $149, and here's the thing. It's for what they already were producing. Like, the games were already being played for an additional $150. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people give you $150 so they can see in a different format what you were already paying to produce. It's unbelievable.
I mean, if it were better.
So that's why they have all these layers, because they got to justify the streaming and the dollars.
I mean, if it were better product, like if the MLB app, if MLB.TV were good, if it were like a good app.
It doesn't have to be, though. The access is what makes it good, not the quality.
It should be good, and the access isn't great either. It's what happened with the Padres last year, right? I'm assuming you guys talked about that last year, where when Diamond Sports Group was no longer doing the Padres games, the MLB came out with a separate subscription for Padres fans, but it didn't work with your already active MLB TV app account. You had to purchase a separate one specifically for the Padres or for the Diamondbacks or for whoever, which is just patently absurd. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's why they're not going to get it, because that's how they're making the money.
Yeah, I'm not an Apple guy, so Apple TV, to me, that's a loss.
The only thing
the game's
I like
on
about
Apple
that.
TV.
Streaming, you can stream, by the way, the radio guys on the Apple TV, which I do like.
This is part of why the Oakland A's owner thinks it's funny when people who have bought a ticket from him sit in the parking lot during the game. He doesn't care if you come through the turnstiles because he's making his money. He doesn't care. He really doesn't.
What are you guys looking for with the news of Strider? What are you looking for out of Chris Sale? Does anything differ there in terms of innings pitched, how much they work them, how much they save them for the second half and beyond?
I think it's going to be really tough, because I think they were in a perfect spot to go for a guy like Sale or a guy like Glasnow. I talked about that for pretty much the whole offseason, because they had enough. When you had Strider and Max, you essentially had one of, if not the best, 1-2 punch in all of Major League Baseball, and you could kind of afford to be a little bit riskier with your 3-4-5. If you tell me Chris Sale, Charlie Morton is a 3-4, that's a much different conversation than Sale and Morton being a 2-3. It does put a lot more pressure on Sale to get to that, say, 150, 160 inning mark. Going into the season, I didn't think that they'd get him over 150 or maybe even over 140 just to play it safe. They could probably still do that this year and still make the playoffs, because they're just that good everywhere else and they're deep. But it does put a lot more pressure on Chris Sale and on Reynaldo Lopez to be able to mm-hmm. stick around in the rotation and stay healthy and try to give you 150 plus innings.
There was a name, A-Train was on me and Matt back before spring training started, and he mentioned Waldrop, the tall kid from Florida. And he wasn't supposed to mention him yet. And he, but not just didn't say his name. Oh, good looking prospect. He said, and maybe by midseason, I was like, huh? And because the guy pitched like 4 games in the minors last year or whatever it was after he got drafted. His first round pick and signed and then go pitch against some other kids. And it wasn't like Skaines, who's now is in AAA and like knocking on the door. They're talking about the middle of this season he may be up there. Mm-hmm. That was already the plan. I don't think anybody in baseball now accelerates a young pitcher. Like, you have your plan, and you're going to stick to it no matter what. I mentioned Jared Jones the other night. Threw 59 pitches, 50 were strikes, and they still took him out. They still took him out because, no, we have a plan. That's just what it is. So when Waldrop comes up, they already viewed him as like a July acquisition almost. That's what that's kind of what the idea is.
Yeah, his college teammate, Brady Singer, they were teammates at Florida. He's lighting it up for the Royals right now.
They invested pick after pick after pick resources with the Kansas City Royals. That's a team with a lot of young pitching. You're right about Brady Singer.
Unfortunately, just not much of it's any good.
They're getting better. They've actually they've had some of those guys.
Well, Reagan's they traded for. That was the Aroldis Chapman trade, and that was a steal for Kansas City.
And Lugo was a signing.
Lugo, Waka, both have been very good, by the way. Yeah. So they're getting better, just not their front
system. And Singer's been lights out. All right, worst idea. This is courtesy of the King.
Get ready.
Kind of talked about it in the opening section.
Chernoff's worst idea.
Yep, worst idea was about Derrick Henry and the fact that he got the offer for free crab cake egg rolls for life. Well, he actually did sign with the Ravens, and this past Monday, the first day of the Ravens offseason program, D. Henry checks in, gets his locker, signs for the playbook, etc. That night, he's at Jimmy's Famous collecting on his free egg rolls. So we talked about getting free access to menus. I had an Applebee's card that I saw some of my teammates here what they would do with the Hooters card, not the intended use. So the worst idea, it really wasn't. You know, I mean, wings and four T-shirts. It wasn't the intended use. What restaurant would you like the unlimited magic 100% off card from?
Wow. I mean, are we going to break this down into different classifications? Are we going to go prime steakhouse class A and then like fast food class C?
Hang on, could I ask you? Like, you and I, and this is truth in advertising, by the way, you could see the Olivers or the Morgans or the couples together at Arnett's. Fantastic.
That's right.
Place.
Love Arnett's.
I couldn't handle Arnett's 5 nights a week.
I couldn't handle it. I don't know if I can handle anything 5 nights a week. It's kind of like if you work at a pizza joint, you can't eat pizza every day, even though you swear you can.
So we're talking three. Like more accessible at that level.
Okay. More in the Applebee's.
Yeah, like a place.
What you're talking.
A place where they're going to issue a plastic card that says 100% off.
I mean, I'll rock some Chili's for 100% off every time. I can make there a couple days a week. Just saying.
Old timer with chili? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pretty diverse menu, friendly staff in some parts, not so friendly in the others. No names need to be mentioned on this particular program. All right, coming up, we will transition back to some football. Less than a week to the NFL draft, less than a week until the Falcons are on the clock. Might be time we put a specific number on Big D. Coming up, more Chuck and Chernoff on 680 The Fan and 93.7 FM. Chuck and Chernoff on a fantastic Friday afternoon here on 680 The Fan, 93.7 FM, 3 o'clock hour, presented by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most out of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters podcast at thisstuffmatters.net. Pipe Morgan in for Matt Chernoff today, the King, Chuck Oliver, Dylan Short, all on hand. I'm talking some NFL draft here. It's hard to believe. We are less than a week away. And everybody is sitting there and trying to project what Atlanta's going to do with the number 8 pick. Chuck, you and I might have gone over this briefly the last time we were together. It seems like the most projected pick, other than Caleb Williams, number 1 of the Bears, which is almost like unanimous now. Like, if that doesn't happen, it'll be the biggest shock of the NFL draft in a while. But outside of that, everybody and their grandmother seems to have Dallas Turner of Alabama, rush end, going to the Falcons. Now, I did find one site that has somebody different and even a different position. It's another Alabama player. It's Terrion Arnold, the All-American defensive back. There's your shutdown corner. Atlanta, that Terry Fontenot, the last 3 years, they've basically gone best player available. What say you?
Love me some Tarion as well. I would say part of the reason Tarion's first-round pick is because nobody throw a Kool-Aid. So, like, don't I want Kool-Aid maybe more than Tarion? And he can return as well, but Kool-Aid is the reason that Tarion got so many opportunities. And, by the way, Tarion cashed in on it. He's an absolute stud himself, but I think maybe I like Kool-Aid a little better. But I like the pass rusher better than almost any corner. And at number eight, okay, gimme, gimme, gimme. There is some thought about wide receiver, offensive, sparkly, shiny piece. Totally different discussion for me. I know it wins in the NFL, okay? The guy who throws the ball, the guy who hits the guy who throws the ball. Like, that's it starts and ends. Like, there's your game, and then a couple of guys who can cover downfield, and we can talk about cornerbacks at that point. But, I mean, the Patriots, they're not special, you know, because of Cheetah. I want to get paid. And they were like, you can play in Miami. You can play. You work out a deal and get back to us. They're special because of Patrick Mahomes and who? Rashee Rice? Like, that's
Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, they're special because of the quarterback. So I'm not spending the eighth overall pick, especially after I've gone 4-8-8 on offensive skill positions. And literally, now, sins of the father, whatever. But the roster is the roster, and you got to deal with it. But you just went 4-8-8 on skill positions, and you had literally the slowest offense in the NFL last year. So, no.
I've got a receiver you picked was one of the slower wide receivers.
I've got to get pass rush, and this one seems easy. Let me quick word about Dallas Turner. I don't know. He knocks quarterbacks out of games. Is he dirty? Okay.
That hit was, yes.
When he fell on Quinn Ewers, I don't know, maybe. I saw him hit Jaden Daniels. You know what? That was checkmate. Like, LSU was done at that point. And so, well, he might have been late. Okay. Like, he's a defensive end in the SEC. I like all of this, and I'm not trying to be snappy or funny or whatever. I'm all about CTE. I absolutely believe that. If you're playing in the NFL, it's a violent, aggressive thing, and here's how you win. Your only chance to play defense, the only way you play defense is hit the quarterback, and he does it. Give me some Dallas Turner.
You go Dallas Turner or Jared Verse?
I think I like Dallas Turner more because of the dog. The dog.
Yeah, Verse will be like around 20. You could trade down and get Verse.
I don't believe he's going to fall that far as to what Chuck is saying. What you do first is get the guy who slings the ball, the guy who takes down the guy that slings the ball, and then the guy that blocks the guy trying to take down the guy slinging the ball.
If Alt is there, which he may go at 7 or 6, or I don't know. Jim Harbaugh used to play quarterback. Maybe he values pass protection.
If they go offense again, I'm sorry. I just can't. You have to address the defensive side of the ball. You got Kirk Cousins, okay? You got something else we talked about months ago. That to me was the logical play, right? You got the guy for a short window of time who immediately makes the offense better to go ahead and show off those shiny toys that you have drafted on offense and haven't been able to do a whole lot the last few years.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got to go defense here.
Mike, that's how you make all this work is – Will we be better with Malik Nabers? Anybody be better with Malik Nabers or Rome or sure. Whomever? The answer, though, is not to get better by just by spending the eighth overall pick on a receiver. Get more from Kyle. Get more and more consistently from Bijan, and then Drake. Wide receivers, freshman in college, rookie in the NFL, they don't immediately have success. Drake had success, and he's had a hard quarterback play. So get more out of Drake even.
And I agree with that point, but I also think it goes to when you talk about not just getting better with your first pick, you also should analyze what are your deepest pools in this class. For example, it's a super deep wide receiver class. You can get starting level wide receiver talent in this class.
Oh, you won't third have McConkey in the second round.
I don't think he's going to fall to the second round, but I would for sure. Like Ricky Pearsall, you can probably get late second, early third.
I agree with that.
That's a guy who's going to be a much better NFL player than a college player. There's a lot of guys like that at wide receiver in this class. There's not a lot of edge rushers that you can look at and say, that's a double-digit sack guy. You've got Dallas Turner. You've got Jared Verse, maybe. And then maybe Laiatu Latu out of UCLA. That might be the only three guys I look at and think could possibly be double-digit.
In Gainesville, you could have the outside linebacker crack Pearsall and then the number one corner pick him up in coverage because there wasn't anyone else. And he'll be the fourth receiver in a downfield.
And there was no one to throw him the ball.
Absolutely. So in the NFL, it'll be bad. No, Graham Mertz had a good season. He did.
Graham was good. The offensive line was terrible. The offensive game calling was terrible from Billy Napier. That's a whole other discussion. But I'm with you. I think it was Short that said it, Dylan. This is a stacked wide receiver class. So what you can get, It's kind of like the position scarcity argument if you're in a fantasy draft. What you can get at wideout in the second, maybe even third round, is a starter.
A.D. Mitchell might be a second rounder.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't know if it's ever been this stacked top to bottom. Oh, now, 3-4 years from now, we'll talk about how but they all panned out. But there's some people that will tell you Harrison's not the best wideout. Adunze from Washington could make a strong case.
I could make
people
that case
love
too.
Him more. Yeah, I that's how absolutely stacked. It is not that stacked at rush end, which the Falcons desperately need.
No, the second receiver from Washington as well as the second receiver at LSU could be first-round picks. There could be two or three Florida State receivers in day three.
And when you talk about the second wide two. Receiver for Washington, do you mean Jalen Polk or do you mean Jalen McMillan? They got two of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're both good. They're both really good. I'll tell you another guy who's good will be following the NFL draft. Our agent to the stars, it's time now for Hadley Engelhard.
Well, you Hadley from Hello. He's an agent for the pros. And now he's on our show. Matt wanted some production. Here we go. It's you, Hadley, from Hello.
Such a touching intro that will stay in my head, occupying space for about 3 days. Hadley, what you say is gospel. It hangs in my head at least a week. Appreciate you joining us at such a busy time. Here's my first question for you, Hadley. When I talk to college football coaches, the thing they hate the most is NIL. But they will also quickly point out there are a lot of guys who would have gone pro a year early that would get bad advice. And when they say, well, I got to get the money now, otherwise what am I going to do? Well, now you've got quarterbacks, for example, in the SEC making seven figures. So what is the new calculus for guys on a rookie contract versus staying at a premier university where they can make $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million and above?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think it really comes down to which kind of player you're talking about. If you're a high draft choice, first round, even a second round draft choice, the NIL money is not going to make up the money you're going to make in the NFL. But if you're projected to be a third, fourth, fifth rounder, you know, it makes sense to stay at whatever school you're currently playing at or enter the portal and test the NIL market to see what's out there. Because, again, you're right. There's a marketplace to make money that you wouldn't make otherwise. You make it now, and, you know, you take the money while you can.
Hadley, I don't know, headline, something on Channel 2, asbestos found in this elementary school. You know, a different type of attorney would be knocking on doors in the neighborhood because you see the headline. I don't know. You're an agent. If you see the headline, FedEx pledges $25 million to name, image, likeness at Memphis, like, that's the dinner bell, isn't it? Like, they got some money to spend for the Memphis Tigers. They said they're concentrating on football, men's and women's hoops. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know Ryan Silverfield very well, their head coach there, and he is doing somersaults. It allows them to compete with the big boys and offer opportunities in those sports. And it will be primarily football and basketball. They will do in other sports and women's sports, but the lion's share of that money will be used for those two money-making sports, and they will be able to compete. And Ryan and his staff, I know, are thrilled. And, you know, again, it gets back to the earlier question. You know, the NIL and the portal really dictates the landscape of college football, which is becoming a professional sport now. And it's going to allow Memphis to compete with the SEC and the ACC as well.
Hadley, now you have NIL interfering with who enters into the draft, probably with good reason for some of these guys who can make a fair bit more money coming back to college rather than being a fourth or a fifth round pick. But when it pertains to the NFL, one of the things that always makes the most difference tends to be how people test. When you have a prospect heading into the draft, do you have conversations about whether or not they should do certain tests? Like, if I'm not sure how he's going to run, do you tell them, all right, maybe don't run? Or do you just kind of sit down and let them do whatever?
Yeah, I mean, Marvin Harrison is kind of the exception to the rule of somebody who hasn't tested. Almost every other NFL prospect has tested at some point. Now, whether you do it at the combine, at your pro day, or at a later date, that's to be determined. We've had all that happen. But, you know, testing is a big part of the evaluation. Obviously, the physical is the most important thing. And obviously, the interviews are equally as important to the physical. But, you know, all these guys at some point are going to get tested. And again, it's just trying to help these teams make a decision. It's rare where you see somebody stand on their game film only. Is what Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, two guys who didn't do it, are they the exception or are they to become the rule moving forward to be determined?
Mike, Chuck, and Dylan here on Chuck and Chernoff at 6-8 of the Fan. We're talking with Hadley Engelhard. Hadley, I'm having a hard time keeping up with all this. I remember Sam Bradford was like the last guy to break the bank because there was no true rookie cap. That's changed. So my question is for you, is there much wiggle room at all? I mean, are we just slotting guys and there's kind of like a given amount for every pick, whether it's the fifth overall pick in the first round or the 20th pick in the second round? What does an agent do to make it a better financial situation for his client on a rookie deal?
Well, first of all, it all depends on where you're drafted. In the first round, I mean, everybody has a maximum cap amount that could be used. So you can never exceed that. It's really scheduling and making sure the workouts are done properly, the interviews, your clients prepare for those things. But financially speaking, the main thing is to make sure you're maximizing your salary cap, you're maximizing the signing bonus, and you're maximizing the guaranteed language. And even when you get to the later rounds, even though there's wiggle room, it's very little. Again, it's about maximizing signing bonus and guaranteed language. And as you get into the latter rounds, it's really about language, which would be split language, that if you put on IR, limiting that language so your player's going to make full contract money on those deals.
Hadley, I'm not arguing good, bad, dead, or buried. I'm just asking, is this true? There are some examples that I think we have seen in tennis and golf specifically where you don't necessarily have to be a champion. And your job as agent is to help people craft their professional lives down the path they want to. Are, in those sports, have you had experience necessarily just getting folks in great with the endorsement and the appearance side so that, I mean, there can only be one champion each week, and so you still can make a hell of a good living without putting titles all over the wall?
Most definitely. I mean, listen, it even goes with, you know, first-round draft choices. It doesn't guarantee success. But, you know, the opportunity to make money off the field, off the court, off the rink, whatever it may be, is real. And with social media, it's opened up so many more opportunities for so many more people. You know, 20 years ago, we would talk about offensive, defensive linemen. They can never make any money. It's just there's not opportunities marketing-wise. Now you take an offensive lineman like a Jason Kelce, and see what he does with his personality and how he's able to make it go viral. And so it's fantastic. And now you look at, you know, the new rock star in Caitlin Clark. I mean, she hasn't won a championship and, you know, first overall pick in Indiana. And, you know, she is going to make a ton more money, as we saw her new Nike deal, allegedly at $20 million, more than she's going to ever make playing in the WNBA. But, you know, there are so many opportunities for every athlete to make money off the gridiron or off the field. And great thing about social media is it doesn't end and your followers don't end when your sport ends. So you can continue doing it long after you're done playing your sport.
Hadley, while we're on the subject of other sports, I want to get an agent's perspective on this. I'm assuming you've at least kept up a little bit with what's been going on with Scott Boras and his clients in baseball this offseason. Is that situation where you have the most high-profile clients, none of them are getting signed for any bit of the money, and when they do get signed, it's for way less money, way less years. Is that an agent's worst nightmare?
It is. I mean, we've talked about this before on the air with Chuck, and, you know, listen, Scott Boras is still the big daddy in baseball, and, you know, obviously there was at some point they misread the market or publicly put it out there. And, you know, will it affect him? Sure it will. And it is a nightmare for any agent at any capacity when you have expectations and your client, more importantly, has expectations and you don't fulfill that. And it gets back to social media. Now there are critics everywhere, people talking about it everywhere, and you got to deal with it. And so, you know, you get the good, but you get the bad. And it's a, you know, Scott Boras has thick skin. He's been doing this long enough. Let's not feel sorry for him. And he will get back from this. And any agent who's been in this business long enough has had these experiences where things don't always work out where you project it to go, but in the end, they always will work out.
Hadley, before we let you get out of here, I'm curious, what does draft day look like for you? What are you up to?
Well, it's not draft day. I wish it was draft day. It's several days.
That's right.
It's pretty chill the first 2 days. You talk to teams, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the real work happens when you represent prospects that are what they call day three prospects, the fourth round and beyond. And the real work begins when you hit the middle of the fifth round and you've got to prepare for your client potentially going undrafted. There are many more prospects than there are draft slots since we only have seven rounds now. So, and it's not a bad thing always, because you can end up picking the team you want to go to, maximizing signs. There's less rules. And so you can do a lot of things contractually with those players and find them a home where they're guaranteed, or at least you feel they're guaranteed to make that roster. So a lot of that work happens, you know, once the middle of the fifth round happens and you're negotiating and talking to teams. And, you know, you may spend a lot of time talking about a particular player maybe going undrafted because that team doesn't have any more draft choices. And then in the seventh round, he gets drafted. So therefore, all that negotiation goes by the wayside. So really, Saturday afternoon, early evening is the busy day for all NFL agents. The first 2 days is a great time. And I've been to the show, and I've been to, you know, wherever the draft is being hosted. I know this year is Detroit, and it's a great experience. But the real work and the, you know, where we earn our dollars and cents is really on day three.
The thing I remember most about last year, as crazy as it sounds, is Will Levis's girlfriend, who could not be less comforting during a very difficult time as her boo, is sliding down the draft board pick by pick. Hopefully, if that happens with any of your clients, you'll be a little more comforting than the rather disconsolate look on her face.
I agree.
Hadley, appreciate the time. We know you got. I wouldn't touch that either. Appreciate the time. I know you got a busy week coming up. Like you said, it's not just one day. It's really a week's worth of work for guys like yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
You got it. Hadley Engelhard, agent to the stars, joining us. And again, guys, I mentioned earlier, I'm a draft geek. I've been watching it for 20 years, like literally every pick. If I'm working, then I'll DVR it and watch it. For those that are just college football fans and maybe you're not as big a pro fan, this is the great thing about this compared to other drafts. It's all players you're familiar with from college. It truly unites the college football fan and the NFL football fan all in one sweet serving of 3 days of epic harmony. Yeah, that's a sales pitch right there.
The combine is a little element of this. It's still highlights. It's like 4 days of college football highlights.
Underwear and Olympics.
And then you have some, you know, skill tests there, but and some measurements, but it's a lot of college football highlights. The reason the draft is even better is it's all highlights of former college stars and something's actually happening. Now they play for the Cardinals or the Jets. So there's nothing wrong with watching all 3 days of the draft. Nothing at all, man.
I don't hide from it. I have friends that make fun of me because it. I don't care. I'm all in. By the way, you could be looking at six quarterbacks in the first round, all of whom are everybody's familiar with. If you follow college football at all, these are not like obscure. There's no Joe Flacco out there. There's no Delaware Mudhat. Like, these are all actual players that from premier universities that you've seen in big games could all be going in the first round. So I think it's going to be fascinating this year. I'll tell you what else. What is fascinating? A Chuck Oliver college football tease.
One SEC player is likely to hear no, and then the real question gets asked.
I like that. I like that a lot. Also, Rangers Braves coming with huge stakes this weekend. Let me rephrase. Rangers Braves coming with historical implications this weekend, and the Kang we'll explain next. It is 680 The Fan, 93.7 FM. Chuck and Chernoff rolling on. Chuck and Chernoff with you here on the drive home on a Friday afternoon. Mike Morgan in for Matt. I'll be back with you on Monday. The King, Chuck Oliver. Dylan Short, the purveyor of the 643 program. Don't forget, You can join Sports Saturday with Westy in our live broadcast from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow at Lake Point Sports. It's Legends of the Spring Weekend at Lake Point Sports, welcoming the Prep Baseball Open at the Baseball Village, Soccer with the Elite Club, National League, plus Pairs Tournament, Volleyball Action, and the Rise Hoops Basketball at the Champion Center at Sports Saturday, live from Lake Point Sports in Emerson, Georgia, for Legends of the Spring this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. For more information, visit lakepointsports.com.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today.
Good to be the king.
Presented by Roof It Forward. When your roof needs to be repaired or replaced, call the roofing company that supports Camp Sunshine. Together, we can roof it forward.
One SEC player, I said, is likely to hear no to a question. Then the real question gets asked. The first question that Nick Harbor gets an answer to is, am I on the Olympic track team? And I think that, like, almost everybody else trying in every event, every time there's an Olympics, almost everybody hears no. Now, as much of an, I mean, freakazoid as this kid is, there ain't a lot of Olympic sprinters that are, like, 6'5", 240. Like, it just does. You know what it translates to? You can beat a corner, and you can beat any safety, and an outside linebacker, I don't know, a 5'10", 180-pound guy from France, he's or from Kennesaw, maybe faster than you, because all it is running fast in a straight line. So when you're carrying, like, a couple of 45-pound weights with you and the other guy isn't, yes, he's bigger and stronger and the muscles and all of that stuff. But Nick Harbor, if you don't know this, he was a five-star freshman, and he probably should have been playing defense. I'll get to that in a second. But Nick Harbor is such a freak athlete that he kind of did everything in high school, including run track and play football. Well, he's like 6'5", 240. And he is a sprinter in, like, the, I don't know, the 10-point, like, high-end range, but you probably need to be in the 10-point low-end range. And so being off, I don't know, 0.5 of a second in the 100 meters is like you have a walker out there if you do a 10.8 and the winner's a 10.3. So that's probably what Nick Harbor is. And you know what that does? That plays really well in the SEC on a Saturday. But he's decided, I'm not going to practice with the football team. They got a spring game tomorrow. And again, this was part of the recruiting agreement. Nick's going to run track in the spring, and he's going to go compete, and then they're going to have some Olympic trials. And like most people, if he hears no, then it's going to be back to football, and you think, okay, so he's going to be a receiver full-time. It would help if he were a receiver full-time. I tell you what the real question is, though. Am I a receiver or a defensive end? There is thought that he may have been the best pass rusher in the entire class coming out of high school, but he says, nope, I'm a receiver. South Carolina would let him coach receiver if they could have gotten him. Like, they went overboard with the name, image, likeness in the agreement with track and the everything, whatever Nick Harbor wanted just to get the kid on campus. And I'm telling you, he's like a wide receiver playing Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, there's not a lot of kids that I've seen play for the Gamecocks that look like him. They need to get through a couple of these formalities first, and I believe he'll get them. Because even like NFL wide receivers, there's not many where they're Olympic track speed. Not really, and they start, and they play a lot, and they do stuff. I mentioned this before. Carl Lewis, great gold medal sprinter, he actually got drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, now that was when there was like 12 rounds, and you had a bunch of picks. If the Raiders would have taken Carl Lewis instead, they already had Sam Grady, Ron Brown, and Willie Gault. They would have had an entire 4x1 Olympic sprint team. Like, that's what Al Davis wanted. That was one owner in the entire league. He was always like, I want the fastest guys possible. That's not really what it's about. You think about track guys. Bob Hayes worked in the 60s. If you don't know Bob Hayes, go look at him for Dallas. Ronaldo Nehemiah and almost every other, like, pure track guy, it doesn't translate. It's not just pure straight line speed, and that's what this guy's trying to make it about, unfortunately.
About Jeff Demps, was that the Florida kid that
another
was drafted
track
by the Bucs
as well? Yes,
where so. That was kind of like the entire reason for him being on the field was run fast.
Chuck Oliver's College Football Today, presented by Roof It Forward, on the College Football Voice of the South, The Fan.
Very few of those works. Very few of them work, to Chuck's point. I was thinking, Demps, you mentioned, Dylan, Trinan Holiday, LSU. And not only was Trinan good at both at college at LSU, he played like six, seven years in the NFL.
Yeah, he had found a spot on special teams because, again, I've said this before, like Ace Sanders was a poor man's or destitute man's version. But like there's a spot on a roster, maybe even to like a Brandon James, Rainey down at Florida. There ain't a lot of them, but there's a spot or two at the NFL level. Not usually. It just doesn't work. Biggest, it's not about sprinter speed at the NFL ever. Really is not.
That's right. And the biggest misconception is, well, all wide receiver is just be real fast and catch the ball and you'll figure it out. That's not the case. Like Ladd McConkey runs a 4.39. Watch him in the cone drill. That scouts are probably more excited about him and showing what he could do running routes and agility and things like the cone drill than just straight away 4.39. There's guys that have run a 4.39 that can't do a simple route tree.
Oh, that they have to shift, cut, reaccelerate, and by that time, like even a slow corner is like, really, I'm waiting on the ball, man. Like you're exactly right. Like that's the thing. The reason I say that is because Ladd McConkey, apparently what he does best, better than anything, is when he changes directions, he doesn't throttle down. Like right. He's almost full speed. He's just suddenly going a different way.
I think that's the key separator, especially for those slot receiver types of the NFL. What was Robert Woods, that one really big year that he had in L.A., that was one of those things where he would just get one of these random cuts that would just send him on by DBs all season long.
Should be interesting. Should be a few of those guys that, in the case of what they're looking at South Carolina, I mean, they thought that Harbor was going to come right in and be an impact wide receiver. And honestly, that probably wasn't very fair because he was a non-impact guy in year one. And he's clearly has to work at it if he's going to stay at that position to be an impact of that offense. All right, we will switch gears to baseball. As I mentioned before, Rangers, Braves. Kang has a historical context about what's going down this weekend at Truist Park. It's Chuck Oliver, it's Dylan Short, and it's me, Mike Morgan, here on 680 The Fan at 93.7 FM.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.